Morning, everyone. It is 10:01, so we are going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to this webinar about version control for web designers, web developers, web professionals, whatever you want to call yourself. This is going to be a great session for you. I'm really excited to share this. This is something that's very new to me. It's something that I struggle with a lot because for the most part, it is very easy for me to not follow these steps and just easily make some quick adjustments and not save them within my version control system. But this is something that is going to be a webinar about do what I say, not necessarily what I always do. I'm really excited about sharing this information with you, and we're going to go ahead and get started. If you have any questions, be sure to put them in the chat room or raise your hand or something along those lines. I've got a couple computers in front of me, so I am trying to monitor everything that's going on. And I'll make sure that I will do the best that I can. I'm going to try to keep this slow and not overwhelming with too much information. I've got a presentation that we're going to go through first, and then after the presentation, then I'm going to show you some live stuff. And I just want to preface the whole conversation on this can be done via a command line type interface, so you can do a lot of hand typing into the terminal, or you can do things with a graphical user interface. And I'm going to pretty much just stay on the graphical user interface on this webinar because it is easier, it's easier to understand, and it's kind of the way that I got started. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. So five signs that you need version control. First one is you don't know what it is or how it can be helpful. I'm going to help you solve that answer to that question today. You code locally and you have no backup system. If you are developing a website and your hard drive crashes and you lose everything, are you out any project that you haven't put to a server somewhere? That's another reason why you need version control. This one is me in a nutshell. You back up your projects by duplicating the root directory. So that basically means you instead of making a what you do to duplicate it, and before you make changes, you just drag a whole copy onto another part of your hard drive, or you drag it off the server, you make some changes, and then you pull the changes back up. And then you've got sites upon sites upon sites on your desktop, on your computer, and you don't know what to do with them. Which one's the newest? Which one has the latest code? How do you merge all of them together? Complete hassle. Version control will help you with that. Or you've accidentally deleted a file permanently and had to recreate. Have you ever spent hours upon hours trying to fix a bug? You got it fixed, you saved it, and then somehow it got deleted. It was on Dropbox and somebody erased it, or you know, whatever the case may be. You've deleted a file and had to recreate it. It takes you way more time the second time, where it's just a complete headache. And sometimes when you hold down, when you break something on your website, maybe you hold down undo on your FTP editor or your web editor, your HTML editor, whatever that is, and you just reverse all changes. You just command Z that thing and you go back until you get to a place where the code was working again, and then you go and try to add all that contact back. Or sometimes what I've been known to do is you get to a point, you copy all of that code, you paste it into another document that sets right beside the main document, then you reverse all the changes, and then you start adding those pieces back in until you figure out where the broken piece of code came. Never again will you have to do these things if you start using version control. So, some immediate benefits that you're going to get. If you accidentally delete something, you can run a single command, or with a GUI interface, you can revert to a previous state immediately. You haven't lost any code. You won't have lost all those changes that you've made in between. It's amazing. The benefits of this is huge. Have you ever had a hard drive crash and you lose all your work? You can use a free service called GitHub or Bitbucket, and you can store your code online, and you can get it back immediately. You can get it back really quick, and that's your entire project. You can get back all your revisions, all your changes, everything. Another huge, huge benefit for using version control. Do you work with others? Like, do you work on a team and you kind of share code back and forth? You wonder who wrote what code that you now have to rewrite. You don't have to blame anyone anymore. Git will tell you. You don't have to, you know, you can see who wrote what. You can easily share it with others. You can throw it up there on a server and people can download it and look at it. I mean, it just saves a lot of time, a lot of headaches, a lot of hassles. This isn't something that I use too often because I primarily do everything myself, but you know, you never know when you might want to share that code with somebody else. Maybe you're developing a plugin and you want the plugin, you want to be able to have other people have access to it, and then they want maybe Maybe then you can give them access to make some tweaks and some changes to fix your code. Whatever, the possibilities are endless. Another thing that I am guilty for, you know, if you start a WordPress website with a theme, you buy a theme from somewhere, and then you go through from that theme and you start deleting things that you don't need. Normally it helps you speed up your theme, it helps you modify and do different things. But have you ever left that code just in case you will need it later? Maybe it's got some really cool formatting or some style. And so you leave it in there and you comment it out. Well, that's just clunky. It adds places in your code. With each snapshot that you do with your version control system, your project is saved exactly in that state. And so you can roll back to a previous state if you ever need to. So maybe you want to get that code back, you know, a year down the road because you want to implement a new feature. It's very, very simple with a version control system. And lastly, but not least, if no other reason that you want to use a version control system, except the developers who are more seasoned than you, more seasoned than me, have deemed it the best practice for developing code. Remember, it's helpful to mimic those that we admire and aspire to be. So that's one of the big reasons that I want to do this. You know, this is the go-to solution that most developers are using. And so I just want to make sure that I'm doing what other developers are doing, especially when it comes to WordPress type things. So what is version control? Version control, in a nutshell, is a system that tracks changes to your files over time. It's as simple as that. It is a system that tracks changes to your files over time. So that doesn't necessarily mean it tracks every file and duplicates multiple files on your hard drive or multiple files in your repositories, but it tracks the changes to your files over time. I'm going to go through that in a little bit of a demonstration. But have you ever done this? And I know that I'm guilty of this as well. You know, let's just look at the project names there. We come up with project, and then we put the date, and then maybe we do a copy just in case, and then we have a January copy, a January 10th, a 17th, a 21st, and a 30th, and then a January final. And of course, you can see I created all of these yesterday at 3:10 p.m., but that's happened so many times. This is a rudimentary type of version control. You're basically saving your content in a different way. However, when you're doing this, you are duplicating your files over and over and over again, and so you might have multiple files inside of each of these project folders that have not had any changes made to them whatsoever, but you're reduplicating them, saving them, and taking up valuable hard drive space. Granted, a lot of files that we work with are very small, but still, you know, you might have a new copy of a project for every day of the month if you go in and you're making changes all the time. So that's something you want to think about. That's not the best way to do it, and we're going to talk about what could possibly be a much better solution. So to become a better developer, I think that if you implement some of these changes or start using a version control, I think that it's going to help you out tremendously. You're going to have the ability to do incremental backups, and so you'll have the ability to back up your website at different points. Maybe you'll back something up and a client will say, hey, remember what we used to have like last year at this time we had this special promo. I really liked how that was on the homepage. Sure, you can go back. You can look at your past revisions, and you can see exactly what it looked like that date and time. You can pull that code right back in and use it again. You can do a long and a short-term undo. Like I said before, like you don't necessarily have to, you know, Command Z or Control Z all the way back to get where you want. You don't have to leave your windows open in fear that you'd want to be able to do a Command Z and get back at some point. I know that I've done that before when I first got started. It's like, oh, there's lots of changes, but what if it doesn't work? I'll just leave this window open and then I can always do an undo. Never worry about that again. It's easier to collaborate with others, like I said, if you're ever using code with a team of people. Using some sort of version control is going to be best for that. And it's easy to track changes in ownership. This along goes with the collaboration. You can see exactly who made what changes, and then you could go, if you're working on a team, you can say, hey, why did you implement it this way? I've always done it this way. And it just makes it an easier way to track those changes and see who did what and kind of learn from each other. So I think that's another way that can help you become a better developer by using version control. So there are different systems that are out there. I know that you've heard me reference Git already. There's Subversion, Miracle, I can never say that word, and Bazaar. Those are the four kind of big ones that are out there. We're going to talk about Git and why. Why are we going to talk about Git? Well, it's lightning fast. It has a distributed version control system. I'll talk about that in a second. It has a staging area. I'll talk about that in a second. It has objects. I'll talk about that in a second. And it's got easy branching. So have you ever been working on a brand new feature to a website, and then you have a client call you urgently and say, hey, I'm having a problem. You know, I've got this bug. Check this out. Well, if you're working on a certain part of your site, you know, you don't want to go fix that bug and then update all your changes because you weren't done with the other project. So you can easily create a branch and then make a change, fix a bug, push that up to the server, and then go back to working on the project that you're working on. So that's what the easy branching is. But first, let's talk about a distributed version control system. So when you clone a repository, and basically let's set this straight, a repository is where all your files are stored, normally on a server. So sometimes it can be on your hard drive, that can be where your repository is, but most of the time you'll put something up in the cloud somewhere and that's your repository. When you clone it, which means you make a copy of it and you bring it to your hard drive, you get the full history, not the latest version. So if I wanted you to work on my team for a project and I said, hey, go to this repository online and download it, you're going to be able to get a full history. You'll be able to see when I first created the project and every little change that I've made and committed to my version control system. So you don't get just the latest, you get everything. So that is really, really powerful. You can see where the project was yesterday. You can see where it was 3 weeks ago. You can see where it was 3 years ago. It all is in there in that clone when you bring down a repository. And you don't need network access to make changes. That's one of the cool things about distributed version control. In order for you to work on a project, you have to download the contents of that file, and then they're locally on your machine. When they're on your machine, then all you have to do is, then you've got a local copy of it. You make your changes, and then you upload it back up to the server. So you all have a copy of the data. So if you have a team, you're working on three different people, we've got a copy in the cloud, the most recent version, and then we've got everybody that's working on the team, they've got their own local version. So in case something happens, you at least have several copies stored locally. So that is one of the great benefits of having a distributed version control system. They also, Git also has a staging area. This is unique to Git. I'm not sure if any of the other ones have it. I know that this one is, they might call things a little bit different in some of the other systems, but I know most about Git, so this is what I know. There's three places where Git stores data. There's a working directory, there's a staging area, sometimes called index, and there's a repository, and that repository is normally in the cloud somewhere. Now let's break these down just a little bit. So the working directory, think of that like a factory. That's where a single instance of one version of your project is found. Like it's where all the work is done. It's usually local on your computer, you're working on it, and it just keeps going and going and going. So that is what that is. That's what the working directory is. That is where you will find all the great information that you're currently working on. Next is the staging area. This is like the loading dock. So this is the file that contains the information about what is going to go next to the commit. And I haven't described what the commit is yet, but just think of this as the area that, okay, this code is done and it's ready to go, and this is going to be saved the next time I do a push to the Git repository. Okay, we'll break this down in just a little bit more detail, but just think of it as a loading dock. You're sitting there, it's like all ready to go, but it quite hasn't been pushed onto the truck yet. And then the Git folder, this is an invisible folder on your hard drive. This is where the Git stores all the metadata and the object information for the database for this project. So this basically is just holding all the content, holding all the data right there. So that's how that system works. So the Git repository then is actually duplicated onto a server in other parts. But for the most part, the Git folder is the repository. It's hidden. You'll never see it unless you turn on the hidden files on your computer. And I'll show you that in the demo when it comes towards the end. So let's talk about the repositories now. First, I want to say that Git, the version control system, is not equal to the GitHub social coding. So this was one of the very first mistakes that I heard about and I saw. I was like, what's going on? What's the difference here? The Git is a system for version control. That's what you install. It runs locally on your computer. It costs you nothing. It does a great job of keeping everything backed up, and it just does wonderful things for it. Now, the GitHub, the social coding, is a collaborative code web app. And so this is what a lot of people will save their work to. This is a social site where people can say, hey, here's my code, and then they will go, other people can download it, they can make changes, they can tweak different things. That is what the GitHub social coding is. But let's go ahead and keep looking at GitHub.org. GitHub.org is that social site that we just talked about where you can store private repositories on their server. So if you're working on a project, you want to save that, you want to throw that up on the cloud somewhere, so now you have a copy on your computer and on the cloud, you can use GitHub.org. Here's a screenshot of some of their pricing. If you have a very small site, you know, or have you only want to have a couple private repositories, that's going to cost $7 a month, all the way up to 125 private repositories will cost $200 a month. So, and you, they do have a free account there, but then all your code that you post up there is free for the taking. People can go in, they can search, and they can find, and then they can use your code or take it, modify it, tweak it, whatever. And so that's what GitHub.org is. So that is one place where you can store your files off-site in a repository online. Another one is called Bitbucket.org. And Bitbucket's structure is just a little bit different in the fact that everything is based on how many users have access to the account. So this is more of what I would use. I actually have a Bitbucket account, and this is where I store some of my information. It's easy to use. It's free as long as you have less than 5 users, and you can put unlimited amounts of data up in the cloud. So whenever I'm done making a revision, I can push all that data up into the cloud. So now it's saved locally on my computer. It's saved locally, the files themselves are stored on the server where my website is, and then all my Git information and changes to the files are also stored on Bitbucket. So they're in 3 different places, and I can always go in, I can make changes to the latest code, all that kind of good stuff. So Bitbucket.org is probably the place to get started. It's very simple to set up. I'll show you on one of the programs that I'm going to use how easy it is to truly get this thing set up. So the next thing I want to talk about is the Git objects. And this is something that is another thing that is specific to Git. So an object, so there's 3 different objects we're going to talk about. The first one is a blob. And a blob is how Git stores file content. And that's basically, it stores, this is basically a text file is considered a blob. And so it's a Git object, and it has what's called a SHA-1 hash. It's a 40-character long string that kind of looks like that big long text underneath there. But that shows, that saves the contents of your file in this 40 long string hash to keep it, to differentiate it between other files with that same name. So it stores the header content and the content. So if you go in and you make a change to, say, your index.php file, we'll just use that as an example, it's going to come up with, Git is going to generate this SHA-1 hash for your initial index.php file. Now if you go in, you know, a month and a half later, and you go and you make some changes to that index.php file, it's going to generate a new hash. It's kind of like its unique identifier for that version of the code. Think of it kind of like as a timestamp or a date code, or sometimes I know in the past, like I've made copies of files and said, this is index, or I duplicate the file and say, okay, this one's index, this one is index underscore modified, and then change the date. So you kind of have that structure. That's doing the exact same thing. So that's a blob. That's basically any piece of content that's just a file. It is stored as a blob within Git's system. Now they also have a tree system, or it's called a tree, and that's how it stores directories, which are aka files. Those are the, you know, anything that's a folder is considered a tree. And it contains the header information, and then for each file inside the directory, it contains information about the file permissions, the object type, whether it's a blob or a tree, the SHA-1 hash, which is that 40-character string, and then it also saves the file in the directory name for that directory, where that file is stored. And so the tree, just think of that as the folder. That's what it's called within. That's what it's called within the Git system. And then there's a commit. That's another object within Git. And this is how it stores the snapshots. And it stores each snapshot with author information, with a committer information, which is normally the same. It's normally the exact same information, but sometimes you could have different authors. Maybe you have somebody that writes all your code, and then you send it to somebody who does all the updating and commits all that information out. So sometimes those are different. It has a commit message, so each time that you publish or take a snapshot of what your code looks like, you have the ability to add a commit message. And then, so you can say, this is when I fixed this bug, or this is when I added this feature. And then it also contains the SHA-1 of any parent commits, so any prior commits that you have made before, and it has the SHA-1 of a tree that the commit points to. So I know that's a little confusing. We'll dig into that in just a second. So how Git tracks changes. Let's look at this in kind of a graph type or some images, and then I think you'll get a better understanding of how this works. So first we want to say a couple of the terms that we'll be using is a repo, and that's the database storing the files. Sometimes it's called the repository. It's the hidden file that's .git that you won't see unless you have your hidden files turned on your computer. And then the commit is a snapshot of your files in time. And so that's basically, it's that snapshot again. The commit is a snapshot. So each file has three different states it can be in. It can be committed, so that means it's safely stored inside the database. It means that it's in the database and it's ready to, it's stored there. It's like that's the snapshot. It's there. There's a modified area where the file has been modified but hasn't been committed yet. And then, so those might be files that you're working on. Those aren't necessarily ready to be added to the next commit, but they are being modified at the time. And then once a modified file is done being worked on, then it becomes staged. And then that means that it's marked to go into your next commit. So still, it's probably a little confusing still, but just remember, commit means it's a snapshot. The snapshot has been taken. Modified means the code that you're currently working on that you're not quite ready to publish yet. And stage is it's all done, it's done being edited, and it's ready to go. The next step in the process is to be actually commit that file. So I wanted to talk a little bit about and just show you what some good commit messages look like. A couple slides ago I said that you have the ability to add messages to each of these. And so you can see like it normally shows off the first seven digits of the 40-digit hash, and then you have the ability to type in whatever you want as part of just your nomenclature so you know what changes have been made. And so the first one here is space. Maybe you fix the space in the tab indent. Maybe you remove the tab index. You added some teleswarm text. You know, whatever that is. You know, these are good commit messages. It says exactly what happened. Now, if you're not doing the best job with your commits and you're just kind of throwing code up there, these are what you could possibly do. You know, maybe you say I changed a bunch of things, or I fixed a rollover bug. Okay, actually now the bug is fixed. Almost there. We almost got it. So just you can see a difference in the way that the messages are written. Like the good commits show exactly what happened, so then it's very easy to roll back and know. So it's all about documentation. It's all about coming up with a good system to say this is exactly what I fixed in each commit. So let's look at this. This is just the first commit of a folder that has just a README document and a library.js document. So this is the very first commit. You just got it set up. Maybe these are some default files that you normally start a project with, or whatever that case may be. I mean, that's not usually just starting off with two, but this is how this example is going to work. So we've got two different files in there, and we'll label these. The tree is that main folder, that root directory, and then each of the files, the README and the library.js, are both blobs. And so that is, you've made that first commit, it's all in there, it's ready to go. Now say, okay, now we're getting started, we're ready to go, we need to go in and we need to start editing the library.js file. Maybe we're adding some new text, we're adding some new whatever, you know, we go ahead and we make some changes. Now what does commit 2 look like? So we pull up commit 2, and we can see that the tree is going to be different. We need a new tree, and we need a new blob, because the folder has changed, the information has changed, because there's going to be a new blob, and since there's a new blob, we need to update the tree, or like there's new information saved in the tree. Say, hey, look at this new SHA-1 hash of library.js. But we haven't changed anything in the README file, and so do we resave that information? No, this is where the beauty of Git comes in. So the next step is it actually, the new tree is going to just point back to the old README file. So you're not actually duplicating stuff that hasn't changed. It is exactly the same. It's just pointing to a new place. So that's where I find that it's very valuable. You're never taking up more real estate on your hard drive than you are when you, because you don't have duplicates of files that haven't changed, which would happen when you duplicate and you just make a copy of your directory and then you start modifying from there. So that is one of the huge things when it comes to using a version control system. And then this is an example works for how Git works. So the workflow, when you're working through projects, you basically modify files, you work on them, you type them up, you figure out what you're doing, you save them, and then once you're happy with what it looks like, normally maybe you're developing on a development server, you're doing a local host, you're something along those lines, everything looks good, you're ready to publish those files, you're ready to put them out to the world, you'll stage those files, and so they'll be ready to go the next time you make a commit, and then maybe you modify some more files, and you're making some more changes, you're adding some new features, you're doing some things, then you stage some more files. And then once you're ready to go, then you hit the commit button. And that will actually save everything. It'll prompt you. You go in, you say, these are the changes that I made. You've committed it. Then you can go and you can take that information and you can add it to your server. And there's different ways to do that depending on if you're using the command prompt or if you're using a GUI interface or just anything along those lines. So that is kind of the workflow that you go through when you're working with a version control system. So now it is time to install Git. You can find tons of documentation and tons of information at git-scm.com. And then if you go to /download/GUIs, you can find tons of different things that you can download, programs you can download for your computer. So I just threw a couple screenshots in there to add to the slide, but they have Mac and they have Windows versions. And I'm not sure if they have a Linux GUI system, but remember you can use everything command line, anything using the command prompt. So this example, I just want to show you how to use some graphical stuff just because it's easier to kind of understand and easier to show in a demo. If you are a computer guy and you're always inside the terminal, you're always typing, then using Git via the command line is going to be the perfect solution for you. So I'm going to show you this example at SourceTree. This is one that is set up, and it's a Mac one. It's free. You can find it in the Mac App Store. It's very simple to use. And first we need to configure, and we put our full name and our email address. Now these are things that that SourceTree will use every time that we do a new commit. It's going to use these details by default. So unless you change them, these are always going to be our default author. And so it's a way, remember earlier I said if you're working on a code project with multiple people involved, it's going to keep each author separate so you know who does what. This is the area where it sets up who you have an author, or like who the author was for that content. Next, you can connect your favorite online service. I use Bitbucket, so I put my username and password in there. If you want to use the GitHub social coding, you can put that in there, and just whatever. If you don't want to do that, you can go ahead and click the skip step button. No big deal there. Then you can go in, you can find local repositories if you already have some. If not, if you're just first getting started, just go ahead and click finish, and then we'll move on. Now it's time for the live demo part so we can see exactly how this works and kind of play around with this system. So this is probably the most exciting part. This is the part that I'm excited about. So first what I want to show you is I wanted to show you how to create, I'm just going to create a new folder right here on my desktop, and then I'm going to show you how to initialize this system that we're using, the SourceTree live demo. So if we go ahead and you can see that we've got I've got this one set up, the git_GUI. This is going to be one that we'll play with in a little bit. But you can see that it's got this .git hidden file in here. And you can see all the stuff that's in here. This is all the database. This is all the repository stuff that saves within GitHub. OK, let's go. Before we do that, let's go. And I'll just show you inside of how this setup works inside of the one that I've already got created. So we'll go from there. And then I'll see if I can figure out what's going on here. But right now, we have a working copy. And in the Git system, we have a README file, a text1.txt file, and a text3.txt file. This one just says there's some new snippet of code, and then this one just has some gibberish that I kind of just pasted right in there. And then we've got a README file with a little bit of information in as well. So this is my quote-unquote project folder that I'm working on, and I can go in and I can look at the master, and I can see that here are everything, all the changes that I've made in the last day as I've been getting ready for this webinar. So I can say this is my very first one. This is the description of the commit. It says I've created two new files, and then I added anything in green over here is adding new text to the project file, and then I added a file called txt2, which is no longer in here because I deleted it at one point. I've added it. I've had a second commit. I've had another commit. I've reverted. I've added another text.2. All these different things. So here's some pre-webinar changes that I made. And there's just a way to go back, and I can see exactly what I've done on every branch of this project. And this is the biggest of projects. You know, it's very small. It's just a demo type thing. But you can go in and you can really see how this works, and you can see that my working copy is right here. Everything is clean. There's nothing going on here. If I went over here and duplicated this file, and we'll call this one text 4. Whoops. Or would you? I keep hitting the wrong button here. Text 4. And then I open that up, and here's a new snippet of code. Here's my new feature area. Here is another new and I can save that. And if I go back over to my Git repository, it says, hey, these are the files that I'm working on right now. You can see that it's brand new, it's untracked. There's 5 lines of code in there. And say that's all I wanted to do. I'm ready to go. I can stage that file. So the next time I'm ready to do a commit, that one is going to be one of the ones that gets committed. And if I go and click commit, I can call it a new message. So I'm going to say created, and this is very basic, you know, created text4.txt and added five lines of code. Okay, so I'll go ahead and commit that, and we're done. We're not working on any files now. There's nothing staged, ready to go. We're all kind of just set up. Now, let's say that I want to get rid of that. Maybe I don't want that. That's something that I was working on. I don't like that anymore. I can go back into the master, and I can go and say that I've got, let's see if I can find this. It's in here, created text 4, and I added 5 lines of code. This is something new that I added, and maybe I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe that code, I don't need that anymore. And I can go back in, and if I hit the reverse button, it's going to remove that file. Do you see that from right over here? It has completely removed that, and it's gone, well, not necessarily forever, but it is gone, and it's not there anymore. Now, I could reverse that again if I wanted to and bring it back. And there's just a lot of flexibility, a lot of things that you can do, and I think it's really kind of neat. I mean, it takes a little while to understand and go through, and this is the system that I just started using, so I'm not real familiar with how it works. I was using for a while the GitHub version. GitHub does a really great job, but they connect. You can only push your content to GitHub, and so that's kind of a problem if you don't have a GitHub account or you're not paying for that service. But the cool thing is, look over here. Like, I just pulled up another system, and it shows that I've deleted this. I've done everything. It keeps updating. I mean, it's all based on that file, that .git file inside your repository. So that is just cool that you can use anything if you wanted to, any software package if you wanted to. If you wanted to go to the command line, I could go in and see that. Oh, I have some unsynced commits. I have some changes that I've never pushed out to the GitHub repository or Bitbucket or things along those lines. So that was a little bit of a demo. I hope that it was helpful, and I'm going to open the floor for any questions that you may have. I'm excited to try to tackle, or if you want to see more demo, I'm happy to try to do that as well. Jared asks about the free account. The free account in Bitbucket is private. You can store as many lines of code in there privately as you want. That is definitely a good thing. SourceTree does have a lot of new features. He just mentioned that it has a lot of different features than what it has with actual Git, with what you're using. Like this is the Git system. It has a couple. I mean, it has four options basically. There's not a lot that you can do there, and you have to push all your content to the GitHub repository. Whereas you have a lot more flexibility and freedom when you're using something like SourceTree. Next question by Jared is, now if I commit to Bitbucket, how do I push the changes to my hosting server? Is that possible? Yes, it is possible. I'm not an expert at that. That is something that I'm still new and learning about, but you can do that. I know that there are different ways to go ahead and do that. I can't show you right now, but because I really don't know right off the top of my head, but there are ways that you can set that up. So when you push it out, you can push it out you can push it out to Bitbucket, you can push it out to GitHub, and you can also set it up so you can SSH that content to your server, and so it just pushes those change files as well. That's something that I'm going to have to dig into and learn just a little bit more. Normally what I've been doing, just because I don't know the system quite yet, I make the changes, I save them, and then I manually upload them. Not the best way to do it, but that's honestly how I've been doing it, because I'm really new to this whole system of using version control to keep track of the changes on my sites and for my clients. Christian asked if I have any experience with Tower. No, I don't. I've downloaded it and used it a little bit, but I don't really have any experience with that at all. I think it's all pretty much the same. I kind of like the user interface, what it looks like, a little bit better, but they all kind of work exactly the same way. It's almost like finding a text editor. Find one that really works for you, the one that you like the best, and then just kind of stick with it and kind of go from there. Yeah, Andreas asked about branching. I can show that real quick. Like you can start working on a branch. You can start changing. Let's just do it in here. It's maybe just a little bit easier to see. Like I can go in and I can say I want to add a new branch. And so if I want to, I can add a new branch off adding a new heading, and I can say new branch. Of course, I would always call them something different, you know, that makes more sense. But a new branch, and now we've got a new branch that we can work on, and then we can add new text inside of this new branch. And then when you're in the branch, you can make changes, and then you can merge those back into the main line. These would be something that you would do in a branch situation, would be fixing a bug, fixing a new something that's maybe not as urgent, maybe a little project or something along those lines. Brian says that Beanstalk app is another good source for Git storage. Free account available, paid users to deploy to server automatically. Okay, so that's a nice feature. That is really cool. Beanstalk app. I'm assuming beanstalkapp.com would be the way to go. I'll just pull that up real quick. So yeah, it's the easiest way to manage code and collaborate and deploy. And so there are some plans and pricing, and it looks like these are different plans, 15-day guarantee. So once again, it's just another system. Use what works best for you. Christian says he's also interested in deploying. Can you do this directly from within a repository, or do you need some third-party tools? Once again, not 100% sure. Once I know, if somebody else knows in the chat room, please enter that. But if I can figure that out, I'll definitely I'll let you guys know that as well. I'm sure that it can be done. I'm just not exactly sure how to describe it to say this is how you do it. Christian says, do you keep the WP database in version control? I don't normally, just because I normally have a local copy and a server-side copy, if that makes sense. With this replay, I'll provide a link to a kind of a page that Mark, he goes by Auto on online WordPress guy, Jagath, I think is how you say his last name, something along those lines. He posted a way that you can actually come up with a local config file, and so then you're never having to overwrite those databases. You kind of keep the databases separate and manually update those. But that's how I do that. Once again, I'm sure that I'm not using the best system. I'm just doing what works well for me, and I'm always out there trying to learn and trying to be better at my craft. Jerry asked, so we install Git first, then SourceTree, then add either GitHub or Bitbucket accounts to it. Yeah, basically, if you download something like SourceTree or the actual GitHub program, whichever one of those you choose, that will actually get you set up, ready to go with Git. And then you would add the GitHub or the Bitbucket accounts to that at a later time. And if you wanted to post those out there. So you can save all your data right on your computer. I know that my main working directory is inside Dropbox. And so then that way my Git folder, my Git repository is stored within Dropbox, and then Dropbox is on all my computers, and then all my files are on all my computers. And so it's not necessary for me to publish always to GitHub or Bitbucket, but it can be. And honestly, I haven't done it as much as I should. This is, once again, like I said at the very beginning, this is do what I say, not what exactly I'm doing right now. Good question. Yeah, Chris asks, if you get set up to push your hosted files to your web server, and then your files are changed on the production server, clients are going to make changes to the production version sometimes with plugins, etc. Can you bring those changes can you make those remotely back to your local version and don't overwrite the changes when you push later? Yeah, there's a lot that you can do with that. I didn't get into like the real depth of Git, but you can merge, you can ignore files. That was one thing that I guess I failed to mention, that there's a way that you can go and say, do not save these certain files in changes that are made within the Git repository. So whether that be the plugins file or maybe the uploads folder, you create a document called Git ignore. And then you put all that type of menu or those folders and files in there that will change it frequently, like maybe the WordPress core files, like you don't want to, you know, change those. But they do have the ability to merge, and if it's going to be difficult though, like if you're trying to if you have a client that's working on production type stuff and they're making changes, I mean, other than plugins and stuff like that, but if they're going in and making small tweaks and then you're having to make small tweaks, using two different systems is never really the best. That's going to be a way to kind of get confused and have those duplicate files and not sure which one's the best one, which one's the live one, those types of things. So I recommend if they're updating plugins and whatnot, I would just ignore the plugins file, and then that way, if they add a plugin, then you can always manually add the plugin back to your dev site, and then you can keep them in sync that way. If they're doing live production stuff, they're making changes that way in the actual theme folder or something, then I think it's going to be a little hairy if you're both not using the same system. If you see up here in the, you've got the ability to branch and you can merge, so you can merge two documents that have the same name. If you're working on a file, two people are working on a file, and you're adding two different features, you can merge those together and get smart enough to know what code's in which and in which ones to how to combine them. And Stephen makes a good point. Git is for text only, I believe, for the most part. Like, so it's like code type stuff. It's not like I don't think you can save your Photoshop files in a Git system, that sort of thing. I think we're just talking primarily text. Yeah, that's a good point. There is a link that I'm going to post right now into the chat room that Chris posted, how to push a Git, like your updates to Git to shared hosting. And that actually looks like somebody has it, just a blog post that they wrote about it, which that's very useful. Thank you, Chris. What is the difference between fetch and pull? Fetch commits from remotes, and pull commits from a remote. Okay, that makes zero sense almost. Fetch commits from the remotes, and this pull commits from a remote. And the way I understand it is pull, I think, just goes and gets what's out there on the remote server, and I think fetch will go and get stuff that is that other people might be working on, or not 100% sure, not going to lie. But I always use the pull and the push feature are the main ones. Not sure exactly. We'll see. You can use Git fetch at any time to update your local copy of a remote branch. This operation never changes any of your own branches and is safe to do without changing your working copy. So maybe if you are, that makes sense. So if you are working on a file and you do a pull, that's going to rewrite all the files that you have on your computer. That's going to retake them from the repository. If you do a fetch, it's going to make a duplicate copy of them back on your hard drive. So that way you can see the different changes, or you can see, I think that's how I understand it. Are there any more questions? Was this helpful? Is this something that you would want to learn more about and kind of dig in and learn about? I know that I loved learning new things, and this just blew my mind when I started learning about it. So I hope that this was very beneficial, and you got some great information out of it, and we'll start using this yourself. And I hope that doing a presentation like this for you guys will help me to use it more often, as I'm horrible with this, and this is one of the big things, one of my big struggles I want to work on in 2013. So is there any more questions? If not, I thank you so much for your time. Thank you for spending 50 minutes with me this morning, looking through the value and just how beneficial it is to use a version control system. One last time for questions. Thanks, Marianne. She says it's interesting and helpful. And Andreas he's been gazing at it for a while and it felt too hard. Yeah, I always thought it felt hard too, and I didn't understand it. And it was like, how do you do what? And I think the best way to honestly do this is set up one of these GUIs. You know, set up the bit or the source tree. Use the GitHub. You know, you use one of these and you play with it, and you kind of understand how it works. And then you can really start geeking out when you can do it all command line. And you can go in and you can see if I pull up my terminal. Well, these are some things that I was working on yesterday that, you know, you can go in, you can add new files, you can open files, you can do things, you can look at the commits made, you can see all these different things. Like I think if I'm right here, I can say git status, and I can see that new changes to be committed says I deleted text 4. Do I want to commit that? I can say, I can back up, I can do different things all via the text line, all via the command line. So I think it's really cool, it's very powerful. If I remember correctly, if I say git commit, I don't remember all the controls. Oh, then I can go in and I can say this is, I can say I deleted text4.txt. Oops. Nope. I forget how to get out of here. And that's another thing. Like I'm learning terminal, but I don't know as much as I should about terminal. So just some cool things that you can do. Yes, Chris, it is 8 degrees here. It is freezing cold. How do coding apps like Coda, Expresso deal with Git remote repositories? I don't know if it has. We can pull it up. I don't know if it has the ability, like in your project file, or even in here. Like there's no ability to add that feature in there. I mean, I think basically how it works is you can save your, like, say you're using Expresso, and you save your code inside of, you know, it's obviously inside a folder somewhere, and then you just start tracking those changes within Git. And so basically you can still use Expresso like you would, and then you commit these changes, but I don't think there's a way that it interfaces and can manually upload your files to the server. I don't think. Once again, another thing that I need to check on. Control X. It says, Andreas, yes, that is what I was looking for. Control X is how I get out of there. Maybe. I want to say it's like, I forget. I'm dangerous at this thing. Anyways, moving on. Coda 2 has a Git client, I think. Let's look. I don't know. I haven't used it, so I do have Coda 2. Clicking around here and seeing if it's got server stuff in it. I don't know if you. Like if you put your projects in here, or if you Yep, what do you know? You've got the ability to add version control right inside of Coda 2. So that's a really cool feature. Should have known that. That would have been helpful to know. Thanks, Andres. All right, any more questions? It's almost 11 o'clock. It's almost 9 degrees outside. And I am excited to go learn more about version control today. All right, thank you so much for your time. I hope that you found value out of this, and stay tuned. The next webinar that I will be doing will be actually March 15th. You want to write that down on your calendar. It will be, I'll actually be in Jamaica on a mission trip on that first Friday like I normally do, the first and the second Friday. So it's going to be the third Friday in March is going to be the next one. I don't have it right off the top of my head what I'll be doing, but it'll be another one very similar to this. Hope that you had a great day, or hope that you do have a great day. It's been a great day so far, I'm sure, and have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.